Let us pray. Gracious God, every time we come to worship, we are putting our trust in you. We ask that the words that we hear, the words we receive, will be your words, that you will guide and direct us, and you will help us to understand what it is you want us to know, as long as we remain open. In your son's name, amen. So I should mention, my name is Sandra Daniels. If you don't know me, I am a pastor out of the Oregon-Idaho Conference. I grew up in this church, and I currently have stepped away from the church and now as work as a therapist. If you turn to your bulletins, at the very first page, I believe it is, the very last paragraph at the top there, where it's under our welcome statement, I just want you to follow along, even though I think it's going to be up there. I'm not sure. I didn't get a copy of the slide, so I don't know what's up there. But it says, we celebrate diversity and welcome all into the full life of the church, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, physical or mental capacity, education, religious background, family configuration, marital or economic status. This last paragraph is a welcome statement that we have all decided as a community to uphold. We recognize the richness and the vastness of God, of a God who created us all in God's image and has called us good. In this way, we are saying we are undivided. Every 10 years, the United Nations comes up with a theme that their hope is to bring about change in the world and in individual communities. And back in the 70s, the theme was the Decade of Women. And in that time, a lot of things happened simultaneously around the world, where women were able to find their voices and begin to make significant changes in their lives, the lives of their family, and the lives of their community. At the end of the decade, the women said, hey, look, we're just getting started. Things are just finally getting ready to kind of take shape. Is there another organization that can bring about or help us to kind of continue what we've already begun? And so the World Council of Churches took on the cause for the following decade and called it Churches in Solidarity with Women. From that, women were taking leadership roles in the church. They were also entering seminaries at larger numbers than before. And this is still a controversial, depending on your denomination, but girls were allowed to be acolytes. And a lot of other things began to take place. And it became this really wonderful, enriched movement that allowed all of us to realize that regardless of gender, we still are children of God. 1993 was the midpoint of this celebration. And there was a gathering of over 2,000 women from all across the country and around the world. And there were approximately 64 men that were brave enough to kind of join us, which was kind of fun. But the one thing that stood out for me was the intentionality of making the celebration diverse from start to finish. We opened with the Native American women all dressed in tribal dress, drumming and chanting, dancing with these huge baskets of tobacco. Because in some of the cultures, tobacco is a way of cleansing. It's a way of releasing the things that bog you down. And it's a way of, receiving a blessing from the Creator. And as we were invited to dance around and share our tobacco with one another, it just became really an amazing moment. And then throughout the week, everything was diverse, from the songs that we sung to the various speakers. So much was I mean, there was not a culture that was not represented in some way, shape, or form. It was a way that we had can celebrate a creator that doesn't that took us out of the norm, if you will, and put us into this vast pool of humanity. And the one thing I took away from that is when we intentionally focus on creating multicultural experiences, it doesn't happen organically. We have to be intentional. And for those of us who are receiving, we have to be open to receiving newness. We have to be open to stepping out of our comfort zone. And we have to be open to a God who was making all things new. I remember one time serving a church where for World Communion Sunday, I shared out of a book called God is Rice. And it talks about the in most Asian cultures, rice is that life-giving force. We look at bread from our culture as the life-giving force. But in other cultures, it can be rice. And so I talked about how important it is for rice to see rice as a different way of celebrating. I went to a training along that time, too, that was done by Pacific Islanders who talked about the coconut being a life-giving force. Because the coconut is one of the few fruits where every part of the fruit is used. And even in World War II, when there was a shortage of blood, the milk from the coconut was used as a transfusion. So you talk about something that's life-giving, it's huge. So needless to say, there's always going to be someone in the congregation who's just not going to be on board to change. And so there were a few people who did complain. And they complained to one of the persons who is considered the matriarch in the church. And I love her response as people were talking to her. She said, "Okay, so what are you going to do when you get to heaven and things aren't done your way? Are you going to ask to go to hell instead?" That's something to think about when we complain about things not being done our way. Because we don't know what we're going to be doing when we get to heaven, but we do know that as long as we stay open, we're going to be gathered in the Spirit of God. The inclusion group began to explore a variety of ways that we can try to be inclusive and be intentional, to do our best to be intentional, to show that we have three congregations that worship in this place. And so we tried to put some stuff that represented the Chinese congregation, and I'm not sure if it's still up on the walls or not, but if not, we need to get back up there. We tried to put something where we have the Ten Commandments done in Korean. And the significance of that for me is about, that was a gift from a friend of mine who is a pastor from Korea, and she eventually died of cancer. But that's a way, this belongs in the church because it represents who she was as a human being and a child of God, and the struggle that she went through just to be a Korean woman. And to end the lack of acceptance, and then unfortunately her passing. Intentionality has to be deliberate. We do a good job of representing that we are a reconciling congregation, but when people walk through these doors, do they see the Korean life here? Do they see the Chinese life here? When we do our time of decorating, are we asking people from both those congregations to come and be a part of setting up the church? When we look at the fact that sometimes we might need new banners, are we asking folks from both of those congregations to help make those banners? And if we're not, the question becomes, why? because this is their church too, and they need to equally be represented. Back in January, the inclusion group did a study called Undivided. And it's your church and racial reconciliation. And it was a 5-week study that talked about ignorance, awareness, intentionality, and the gospel community. And the focus was on racial diversity in the church and the ways that we can intentionally focus on being a multicultural church versus a multicolored church. Is this my mic or should I not move? Okay. Anyway, what we discovered was there are things we do well, but there's more that needs to be done. And we discover that when the church is not intentionally inclusive, then we are intentionally being exclusive. Peter had to learn this in a very different way, where God literally changed his whole perception and understanding of who God is and how the gospel needs to be relevant to all people. So I'm going to ask Dolly right now to come up and to read the passage.
The scripture is from Acts 10, verses 1 through 33. Cornelius calls for Peter. At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. He and all his family were devout and God-fearing. He gave generously to those in need and prayed to God regularly. One day, at about 3 in the afternoon, he had a vision. He distinctly saw an angel of God who came to him and said, "Cornelius?" Cornelius stared at him in fear. "What is it, Lord?" he asked. The angel answered, "Your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God. Now send men to Joppa to bring back a man named Simon, who is called Peter. He is staying with Simon the tanner, whose house is by the sea." When the angel who spoke to him had gone, Cornelius called two of his servants and a devout soldier who was one of his attendants. He told them everything that had happened and sent them to Joppa. Peter's vision. At about noon the following day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up to the roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat, and while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw heaven opened and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles and birds. Then a voice told him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." "Surely not, Lord," Peter replied. "I have never eaten anything impure or unclean." The voice spoke to him a second time. "Do not call anything impure that God has made clean." This happened 3 times, and immediately the sheet was taken back to heaven. While Peter was wondering about the meaning of the vision, the men sent by Cornelius found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate. They called out, asking if Simon, who was known as Peter, was staying there. While Peter was still thinking about the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Simon, 3 men are looking for you, so get up and go downstairs. Do not hesitate to go with them, for I have sent them." Peter went down and said to the men, "I'm the one you're looking for. Why have you come?" The men replied, "We have come from Cornelius the centurion. He is a righteous and God-fearing man who is respected by all the Jewish people. A holy angel told him to ask you to come to his house so that he could hear what you have to say." Then Peter invited the men into the house to be his guests. Peter at Cornelius' house. The next day, Peter started out with them, and then some of the believers from Joppa went along. The following day, he arrived in Caesarea. Cornelius was expecting them and had called together his relatives and close friends. As Peter entered the house, Cornelius met him and fell at his feet in reverence. But Peter made him get up. "Stand up," he said. "I'm only a man myself." While talking with him, Peter went inside and found a large gathering of people. He said to them, You are well aware that this is against our law for a Jew to associate with or visit a Gentile. But God has shown me that I should not call anyone impure or unclean. So when I was sent for, I came without raising any objection. May I ask why you sent for me? Cornelius answered, 3 days ago, I was in my house praying at this hour, at 3 p.m. Suddenly, a man in shining cloth stood before me and said, Cornelius, God has heard your prayer and remembered your gifts to the poor. Send to Joppa for Simon, who is called Peter. He is a guest in the home of Simon the tanner, who lives by the sea. So I sent for you immediately, and it was good of you to come. Now we are all here in the presence of God to listen to everything the Lord has commanded you to tell us.
Peter was really good at spreading the gospel among the Jewish community. But God chose to expand beyond the borders of Jerusalem. But before this could happen, Peter's heart had to be changed. He had to be placed in a trance and be given a vision where God said, what God has made clean, you must not call profane. Then God sent Peter to gather at Cornelius' house amongst a variety of different Gentiles and preach the gospel. One of the greatest bones of contention around in all churches, not just this church, is music. What should we sing each Sunday? Many want to come in and they want to sing the songs that are the good old songs that they're familiar with, and they don't necessarily want to learn new ones. And I will say the first three songs that we sung this morning, you all have heard before. It's just that we don't get a chance to repeat them for a variety of different reasons. But they have been sung. Music is ever-changing. Yes, the songs that were sung back in the 1700s were great and wonderful. However, there's songs that are part of the 21st century that are equally great and wonderful. Hymns, contemporary, praise. Where's the jazz? Where's the mariachi? Where's the metal? Where's the rap? We do a little bit of rock, and Pastor Rajiv, as you notice, really likes country. But who decides what is right and what is wrong and what should be sung in worship? Well, it's very simple. God decides. We who gather week after week are here to worship God and to celebrate with one another. God doesn't call us to a very simple same old, same old, same old, because God reminds us that God is God, and God is always making things new. And we have to be open to that newness. And so when we close our minds and our hearts to worship and then complain because we're not worshiping, guess whose choice that was? Because God is still at work here. God is still making all things new. The Spirit is still moving around us, and Jesus is standing in our presence. And so what we bring and what we take away is our decision. Today, I picked the music, so if you didn't like it, pray about it, and then come see me, not Barbara. Because Barbara knows I'm going to keep pushing for gospel music. Because this is part of who I am. We all come and we celebrate from our own cultural perspectives, and they are just as valuable as those of the dominant culture. There's music that I just say, oh, I want this church to sing it. And so fortunately, Barbara is open to it, and the praise band just kind of goes along with it because they kind of have to, which is great, you know, because this hasn't always happened in my time here. And so I am really appreciative that you actually take that time to help us and to help me share what is equally important to me. One of the things that, again, because of the fact that, you know, you got to be open to the moving of the Spirit, just like Peter was, and always trust that somehow God really does have a purpose if we just really trust. The music, what for me, God said, this is the message that I want. Find the music that says this. Before I go there, did everyone notice in one of the songs there was a new way, a new name for God? Jehovah Jireh, right. There is a richness that I've become, just recently become familiar with, and I guess it's mostly in the Black culture, that Jehovah Jireh is it's used in a lot of music. And if you look it up, there's all these other things that go with it. But it means God will provide, or God provides. And so the message that I was asked to give you through music alone was, we are children of God, asking for God to hear us from heaven and to bless us, so that every day, every praise belongs to God. And through it all, we will trust in you, loving God, and with our lives in our hearts. Openness. I can't even stress that enough. We serve a God who is making all things new. And we, the people who gather, have to be open to that newness if we want our lives to really be enriched. We've talked about in many levels as we have had various conversations around multicultural, being multicultural in the church, about that chance of getting to know one another, getting to understand one another. One of the things out of the undivided was we seek to understand before we are understood. That if we're truly doing that, then how we all come together from our own cultural experience really enriches our lives. And we see a vision of God that gets opened to us because God is the creator of all people. And we are all created in the image of God. And so we get glimpses of how God works, of who God is, and how God moves and breathes. We are told that, you know, the people who gathered at Cornelius and the message that Peter received was that anyone who does right in the name of God, anyone who is open to following who God is, that God will bless. And so, and that's a very vague statement, and how does that get determined? Well, it gets determined by our lived and cultural experiences and our understanding of who God is. And when we share that, then it enriches all of us. God doesn't ask us to be complacent. God asks us to change. And we, God's people, because we celebrate a God who is always changing, needs to be open to that spirit. I've asked a few people who were part of the study, both in the group and then also listened online, to come up and share three things. What does it mean to be a multicultural congregation, to be a part of a multicultural congregation? Because that's who we are. What do we do well, and what do we still need to work on? So if everyone would like to come up and then just take turns speaking, I invite you to come up now.
I don't know who's sharing with me, but I'll go ahead. So first, when I think about why a multicultural church is important, I think about my friends, many of whom have different backgrounds than mine, and I consider them my dear hearts and my neighbors. And so in enacting the verb church, with those outside my culture matters to me a lot because I love them. And I think we can extend the term culture too. I know we talk a lot about ethnic cultures, but I think we could talk about regional cultures or rural and urban cultures, tech culture here, youth culture, because there are so many contexts that people come in need of Christ. And so, given our church's name, I probably don't need to remind everybody that we're called to love everyone that we meet, our friends, whoever they are, but also who it's not easy or convenient or natural to love. And I think Good Sam does a remarkable job in many respects at extending this welcome to other linguistic and other ethnic cultures. I think about our services, especially our joint services. I think about our ESL. I think about the intentionality that we've made in allocating resources at this church. And so at the same time, while God calls us to be a community of all nations and races and political views and economic backgrounds, I think, at least for me, I often think of this as an outreach charge or as a service opportunity, which it is, but isn't only. And so in thinking about that, the how and the why and the how better of being a multicultural church, I wonder if, and this is just reiterating Sandra, but we think about it not as an offering, but as an opening. Being multicultural, I think, extends us to the unique ways that God might reach us, that keeping God in my normal context might not allow me to see what he's doing and what I can't even imagine. And so I think that part of creating a multicultural community is realizing that nothing is normal. It's only normal to me. And it might not be normal to God. I don't know that God operates in a normal capacity. I think it requires learning and surprise and even expecting these and expecting change. I'm loving the way that all of this is sort of dovetailing with what Pastor Rajiv has been putting on our hearts. Because I think if we're going to serve or the multi-pluripotent Lord that we serve asks us and comes to us in the least likely ways, in the ways that are most outside of our comfort zone, and that I don't know exactly what this looks like entirely, but I think it means taking nothing as given and clinging to nothing but the law of love. And I hope we can open our eyes and our ears more and more to God's working across all contexts and in all lives, for a richer sense of his character and his love, and reasons to praise his ultimate culture of sacrificial love, and his way. That's his way above all of our many ways. So thanks.
I enjoy learning about other cultures. And through this church and through our ESL program, I've had the opportunity to do that. I've met many interesting people and learned the history and the culture that they came from. And realizing that our way of doing things isn't the only way of doing things, and it may not even be the right way of doing things. The ESL program, the people I've worked with in that program are just so gracious and so appreciative. This is kind of selfish, but it's kind of an ego boost for me because they just are so appreciative to our time together, and I enjoy them as much as they enjoy me, I guess, apparently. Jesus taught about crossing boundaries, and doing that allows us to live up to our faith. Jesus crossed boundaries. He sat down with the Samaritan woman at the well. He had dinner with people across many different boundaries. When asked what we could do better, I guess at least personally, I need to be intentional about getting to know new faces. I think the names and features that we're familiar with are a lot easier for me to learn than names that I'm not familiar with or faces that, I hate to say it, but to me all look alike. And so I'm working on trying to match names to faces much sooner. And helping people who come to our church from all different cultures, finding a place that they can fit. And if they want to be have a leadership position or add their decorations to our sanctuary to make them feel empowered to do that.
Thank you both, Katie and Carolyn, for sharing. In closing, I'm going to close the way I opened. We celebrate diversity and welcome all into the full life of the church, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, physical or mental capacity, education, religious background, family configuration, marital or economic status. This is the church. We are the ones who have gathered in the name of God to celebrate God and to worship God and celebrate with one another. Amen.